The Ballad of Heartwork is a new series from The Heart is a Dungeon. Most of the story will be whimsical in nature, with moments of fear or sadness. Please take care of yourself and check the content warnings for each episode. And thank you so much for listening.
We see the end of the story. Not our story, but the story nonetheless. We see a world empty of all sentient life and the ruin of the largest city that anyone has ever dreamed. There is a long unkept promise, there is a name yet to be read aloud, and there is you. Not a god, not a mortal, but more of an idea. More of a season than an angel, and more like a star than a monster. You are either all that is left, or you are the beginning of something new. When we turn to your page and begin to read, where do we find you in this broken world, and what do we see when we close our eyes and see you?
Once more, just as before, Agresta kind of slowly, sleepily opens her eyes, kind of blinking them and wincing against some mist that starts to fall on what appears to be fur at first, but is more akin to plant matter. She kind of lifts her nose and unfurls her body, which is very much weasel-like in shape. It's lithe, and she stretches out two legs covered in sort of layered ferns, this bright green material that fluffs up and starts to immediately shake off little dewdrops that have collected. Her antlers are these two bark-covered branches that sprout up from her head that kind of curve down in a spiral sort of way, the way a ram's set of horns would, and she sleepily blinks these glowing, sort of void-like eyes, and almost immediately paces around just in a quick circle, the way animals do, and presses her feet against what is a cold stone surface with the roar of a waterfall nearby. It's relatively dark in here, but the morning sun, as it angles in through an opening in a cave, starts to reflect off of the water and through the mist of the waterfall crashing outside and kind of spreads a bit of rainbow into the air. And almost immediately, Agresta kind of like whips her muzzle back around and pokes her nose into some of the flower buds that grow along her back. Very similar to almost spikes coming out of a creature's spine, but instead of being hard in nature, they're these soft flowers that are mostly closed, except for a single one, which, as she sticks her nose into it and gives a questioning sort of huff, reveals a small little frog creature. Devoid of color, it has the same sort of spotted patterns as what would be a poison dart frog, but instead of being bright blue, it is just gray and monotone and, in a weird way, devoid of what should be blue. And it evokes a certain sensation upon looking at it, but Agresta is very used to this, and she just gives it a little friendly poke and kind of makes sure it's doing okay, wakes it up for the morning, and then stands and begins to exit the cave and examine the world outside and the river that she's made into her home. One particular location doesn't usually keep Agresta for super long. She tends to keep moving, and her ultimate goal is to explore as many biomes as she can and nurture as many different types of plant life and as many different types of environments as she can. But here in particular, this like river of blue cutting through the otherwise greenish and cement-filled landscape has attracted her and kept her for a good couple weeks. Agresta's a very whimsical creature. Upon watching her movements, she tends to jump from tree to tree or from abandoned building to abandoned building, and so it seems as though the plants that she grows in her stead would be almost wild and almost like someone throwing paint haphazardly onto a canvas. But when it comes to her work and her purpose, she is significantly more controlled than one would expect. And she does her work with such care. As if in demonstration, she almost immediately heads over to the base of the waterfall and kind of padding around the grass and the mud that grows along its banks. She moves to a spot just outside of where the water is pounding into the basin and kind of reaches down as if to take a sip of water. And instead, she shoves her face fully under the surface, and with her void-like eyes kind of glancing around underneath the water, she is very clearly searching for something. And after a moment, her eyes land on it and her head stills as she finds what looks to be a series of unsprouted lilies. It's, to her, a moment, a glimpse of undiscovered potential. And very gently, she lifts her head out of the water, and the sprouts along her ears and her branching horns look a little bit happier at the combination between the water and the sunlight. And very gently, she reaches around and takes her little frog friend and just sets it on a nearby rock. And almost immediately afterward, darts away and leaps into the water, kind of stepping on what seemed to be invisible gusts of air across its surface before allowing herself to plunge underneath, kind of diving towards these seedlings that only she can really sense growing, that a normal person would probably not even take a second glance at. And she lands in the mud a little bit, not sinking in as a creature her weight normally would, but instead just kind of hovering right above it, and she dips her nose toward the lilies and attempts to take a sniff. And the water doesn't rush into her nostrils. There's some sort of air bubble preventing her from functionally drowning under there. But she nuzzles at the seedlings a little bit and seems disappointed in the lack of smell. She kind of frustratedly looks around at the water and the lack of scent that she's gotten used to, and gently, with a single paw, just kind of presses down on the seedling and pushes it a little further into the mud. And for a moment, it seems like she's stifling it, snuffing it out, as if it's disappointed her. But after a moment, she lifts her paw again and raises it higher and higher throughout the water. And underneath it, a plant begins to form. Not a normal lily, some sort of aquatic thing that is suddenly given a new purpose. It seems to be reaching towards the sun and towards the open air as if it suddenly has a hunger for the surface world and a hunger to share what it has to share with everyone that it didn't have before. And Agresta begins moving upward, pushing off of the muddy floor of the basin of the river and swimming upward, guiding this plant up and correcting it every now and then with a practiced movement of her paws or her nose or a flick of her tail until finally it breaches the surface. And it's just a single seedling, but almost immediately upon hitting the open air, it explodes into a colorful bloom. It's got layers and layers of petals that almost look like a carnation, but more aquatic than that, and with a deep purple shade that is not often found in nature. And it smells amazing. It gives the scent of home and of belonging, if that makes sense. It's the scent that you would have when you visit your childhood home, the place that you grew up. Very much like cinnamon, almost like cookies a little bit, but without the intense sweetness and more moderate. And Agresta looks back at her frog friend, who just kind of regards her with the same neutral expression it always has, painted without color. And very solemnly, she dives back down and continues her work for a little while, doing the same thing with other seedlings.
From all across the riverbank, we see the shift and shadow of realization. The heads of creatures of deer, badger, rise and take to the air. Hunter and prey all approach the water's edge and drink, if only for the first time. Agresta, has there ever been a world where you almost decided to stay?
Yes, but it made her want to stay in the sense that she felt that there was still work to do, and she got torn away from it. It's very much like when someone picks up a new hobby for the first time. You have that overwhelming guilt of needing to put it down, even though you haven't mastered it yet, but you know it's not right for you, and you have other things you need to attend to. And after quite some time in what was otherwise a relatively barren, deserted sort of place, she came to the realization that she had been neglecting other worlds, other locations, other places that needed her help, probably equally so, including the current planet that we're on. And while she doesn't see anything as not deserving of her help and her prowess when it comes to the scent of plants and the emotions that they invoke, a barren world was a lot harder to work with. And by comparison, this one is barren in a different way. It's barren, but it holds memories that need to be unlocked and potential futures that need to be guided towards. Scent is a memory for Agresta, and then also a less so something to do with her and more so a history of everything that came before. And the scent of old books, for example, is not just a scent on its own, and it's not just something that you could fill a wax warmer with, but instead it's something that tells the tale of the people who worked to compile truths or create fiction and commit it to paper, and the materials that it went into it, the trees that had to be chopped down in order to create this book, and the mixing of ink and natural materials and leather and just age. And so it's a method of communication to her. It's a method of communication that could last through the years if preserved and tended to properly. There was one scent that Agresta had created a long time ago on a world that may or may not still exist. She hasn't had time to check in on it recently. And immediately upon creating it, it hit such a chord with her that she took it away again. Not as if it was a mistake, but more so something that she knew that whatever inhabitants came to this world after her wouldn't appreciate in the same way. A As she steps back onto the bank of the river and kind of shakes the water from her fur once more and goes over to greet her frog friend, she nuzzles it up onto her nose and then gently, very delicately, wraps her neck around and places it back into the honeysuckles on her back. And as she does, she pauses for a moment and just inhales and takes in that scent, the one that she's kept locked away from the rest of the universe. And she thinks back to when she created it. Originally, she was looking at a plant that had no flowers, something that was otherwise almost parasitic in nature. Not to say it didn't still deserve a chance at life and didn't deserve a scent, but it was this vine made of massive, incredibly large leaves that would crawl up a tree trunk and steal away sunlight from the tree that it was inhabiting and throw everything in the nearby area that wasn't it into shade. And while some people, some other entities disliked this nature of this plant, it was still Agressa's job to go up and give it a scent. And so she would hop from leaf to leaf until she made her way up to the top of the tree and, using her paw, begin to trace the veins on each leaf until she found a scent that she felt like worked. And as she did, she came across the scent of loss. It was the scent of selfishness. It was almost like char, but a little bit more with a mixture of decay and sweetness. And to her, it reminded her of things that once were that would never be again. In the current moment, she stares sadly at the frog once more and takes one last whiff of this scent of loss and moves into a beam of sunlight, kind of passing by the animals that have gathered and weaving through them, not really paying attention to them anymore, but figuring out what her next task is instead. Agresta is going to examine the lilies and just for a moment perch on a rock next to the waterfall, and while listening to the gentle drone of water hitting water from a great height, she observes the creatures in the area and just sits and watches their behavior as they come to drink. A few reach over and try and nibble on the petals of the lilies. A few kind of stare at their potential prey, not making a move, but noting the presence of what could be their next meal. And for a moment, her mind drifts back to that parasitic plant that she robbed of its scent before. And very suddenly, in the same way that a cat suddenly decides at 3 a.m. to stop its gentle sleep and just stand straight up and get about cat business, she stands straight up. Legs as stiff as logs, and she looks around at the trees bordering this area. And rivers tend to have very fertile soil. They carry nutrients from far off and from higher elevations to lower elevations, and it's not unusual for the trees surrounding these rivers on its banks to hold the local ecosystem together, fed by the nutrients, but at the same time holding the soil and keeping it from eroding further downstream. And with a renewed purpose, she sprints over to one of the larger trees in the area and notices some vines crawling up of it. Some ivy, not the same sort of parasitic plant that existed on the other world, and a lot more gentle, a lot less opportunistic. And she notices that it crawls upwards, kind of filling in the little recesses in between slices of bark, and occasionally poking its roots into what look to be woodpecker holes and across the sideways branches as they stretch out into the sun. And she gently taps her nose to the base of this vine, and a gust of wind begins to pick up. It ruffles the slightly longer fern fur on her chest and kind of shakes the honeysuckles on her back a little bit. And then a series of scents begin to emerge. The wind moves upward, and At the very base of the tree, it begins to smell almost fruit-like, but in a citrusy sort of way. But it is intense, it is powerful. It carries for such a distance from the couple of feet that span the base of this tree over across the river, carried by the, you know, pounding of the waterfall, kicking up mist and wind. And some animals begin to take notice, specifically anything that would be a ruminant, all these four-legged deer, a couple of foxes in the nearby area, a raccoon here and there. Anything that could reach these first few feet of vine begin to slowly make their way over, just kind of picking their way across, pretending to be disinterested the way animals do. And then the wind moves further up, but as it gets towards the center of the tree trunk, it changes. It no longer smells like citrus, it doesn't smell like fallen fruit. Instead, it smells like fresh flower buds. And it evokes a sense of nurturing. A little bit like hay as well, a little bit like decay slightly, but just enough to attract the occasional bird, which begins to move over. A single bird kind of lands on the tree trunk and pokes its head into an abandoned woodpecker hole, and just this round robin-looking creature hops in, hops about on the inside, and then hops back out again and just kind of regards Agresta. And then up towards the top of the tree, as the gust moves further up, it smells almost like ozone as it reaches towards the sky and begins to take the most advantage of the sunlight that it can. The larger birds that use these tallest branches to rest after long periods of flying and migration and hunting through fields for little mice and other prey creatures, where they can get the most high vantage point possible, they begin to find a home here and are attracted by this scent of blood almost, but in a homely sort of way, in an anchoring sort of way. And Agresta lands back on her haunches. She kind of sits back and follows with her pink void eyes the tracing of this vine up the tree trunk, satisfied at the stratification that she's made and ensuring that the creatures of this area all have their own scent to follow and are all attracted to the different parts of the tree so that they don't cross paths with each other more often than they should. And in doing so, she feels satisfied in that she's nurtured not just the plant, but anything that feeds off the plant, anything that resides in the same area as it, and has made a sort of food web into a home.
Oh.
even 10. So the second one says, what you create can learn from its ongoing environment over time. What does it learn and who/what from? Agresta would recall the abandoned cities and offices and the evidence of the generations that existed before she arrived on this planet. And kind of regarding this vine carefully, she's going to, if she can, imbue it with the ability to adapt. And should it become necessary, it won't have to cling onto bark any longer. It could do the same to brick or cement and still ensure that the animals that feed off of it, that are attracted to it, that reside near it and around it are taken care of, regardless of the home tree still being there. And she makes it more opportunistic.
The evangelists of air, of water, or earth approach in order, and each one of them take up this brand new seed from the home tree and head out into the world.
Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I'm here to tell you about Dice Exploder. Podcast where each week me and a rotating co-host take one tabletop RPG mechanic, just one mechanic, and break it down as deep as we possibly can. If you love thinking about role-playing games and how they work, this is the show for you. Come listen to me talk to Alex Roberts about love and pity, John Harper about elegance and layout, and Mikey Ham about, what else? Exploding Dice! It's an interview show, a review show, a design show, and most of all, a show for anyone who loves these games. Come on down and join us. Find Dice Exploder at DiceExploder.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Leora begins to form just on the outskirts of the ruins of the city. At first, you would only see a patch of sunlight that gets a little bit brighter, and then as it starts to swirl together with the local elements of this planet, humanoid-like form starts to take shape. They don't particularly have a face, but they do seem almost human, maybe 3 or 4 feet tall. There's kind of a reflective quality as a skin of sorts emerges. It almost looks like it's made of glass or water, but it's constantly flowing, and there's almost kind of a breath-like effect to the way it pulses rhythmically in and out. But the sunlight stays within, almost illuminating it from behind the surface. And Leora begins to just sort of graze across the surface of the environment. My task is to be moved by what's around me. And as I take in the space, I begin to react to it. There's a lot of different emotions. I think at first the obvious tragedy that took place here inspires me to billow outwards into darker colors, perhaps a crack of lightning. But seeing the way that the plant life is trying to create something new here, I'm really curious. And I will continue to explore this place until I find the answer. What here is lacking a voice? And it feels as though something is trying to rebuild. I just want to get to know it a little bit before I decide what it needs. But as I float through, I'll continue to rain on the plant life below me.
What is it like to arrive in a world that has yet to give birth to weather?
For me, it is silence. But that's why I'm here, to give it a voice. I'm inclined to grieve first for what was broken. Often I've found that planets can't really truly be something new until they've grieved what it was. And so I want to pass through a building, something that looks broken, and continue to rain as I do so. But as I move through this space, it's almost like the clouds expand around me, and that breath, like in and out, begins to take place almost in the objects that I'm passing, not even necessarily just organic ones. Like the building begins to breathe a little bit. I would love for it to tell me a story.
Whatever stories this structure is holding are just as shattered as the world around it. The city was ending for such a long time. And it can be hard to focus on a single voice when you're in a cathedral where so many ghosts have gone to cry or to pray. Small clouds made from gathered sorrows rise and set pace behind and beside you. Timid flashes of lightning, still learning, shy and unsure.
I furl out kind of
as if a fog was emerging into arms of sorts, welcome the little cloud into an embrace, and I lose some saturation of color and just begin to weep with it. So much death and tragedy here doesn't really need to be specifically understood for me to recognize the grief. And as I hug this little cloud, I kind of absorb it into me. And as lightning begins to crack in my hair, a wave of thunder emits off of me that shakes through the building. With it, almost a permission to all the little particles holding it together that it's okay to let go now and welcome the building to collapse. My form almost looks childlike as it maintains its form but skips across the air and little ripples of clouds kind of poof at my feet as I do. First, I will whistle just a little encouragement at the clouds following behind me. A little color returns of the brighter variety as I billow a cloud of hair behind me and go towards that sensation.
You notice the work of hands that you know. A garden of large bottles filled with a flower here or there. The wind of you is music as you pass through this grove.
My form is very reactive to what I feel. The recognition almost sparks off of me like rainbows through the mist that's been formed by the rain. I don't very often get to see anyone, and I flutter at seeing something I recognize. My purpose is to breathe breath into the planet in such a way that it can communicate its own feelings through the weather around it. Ten. Plus three. I would like to see the wants, needs, and hopes of the ruins of this city. Leora blows through the city like a wind, taking the time to pass through every opening and doorway that they can, passing through every wall that will let them. And as they do, they're collecting all of the stories of what happened here. And as she does, she picks up momentum and the storm begins to become almost violent as it rattles through the city, collecting all of this grief and pain and hope and some other good things too. Within a matter of, I don't know, minutes or hours, the city is almost completely enshrouded in this storm. But the strange thing is there's little microcosms of different climates occurring within the storm. Some hail here, more intense lightning there, as she allows the city to breathe out through her the traumas of what it was. After a while, as this energy has been given a channel out, it's almost like it settles into more of a natural breeze through the city, and almost as though a new season is allowed to arise as it almost cohesively is able to find a new space. And not to say that it will never have storms, but giving it a voice with which to process the things that happen to it, because usually the rocks and things like that don't get a voice, and so that's what I do. It's a little bit surreal to watch a massive thunderstorm, almost kind of childlike, cartwheeling smaller and smaller into a fairly childlike humanoid form. Once again, that skin that almost looks like glass or water, lit from within with sunlight, just starts skipping along, feeling for the next spot.
I think Agresta would be in the middle of wandering between the legs of these tall deer and elk that don't really seem to pay her any mind, but as you land, all of the deer immediately at the same time in unison just poke their heads up away from the water and away from the vines and stare at you in your general direction, and Agresta, as if she were a deer herself, follows suit. She plants her feet and stares over at you, and while the herd immediately kind of begins to scatter and just out of wariness and protection, they all move in unison away from the glade, but she's left standing there, kind of staring up at you. And then after a brief moment, there's the closest thing that you can see to recognition in her eyes, and her tail begins to swish back and forth a little bit. You can feel the gusts that come off of it as if they were your own lifeblood, and through them you get a sense of almost as if she had met a celebrity. Where she's familiar with your work, she's familiar with your gusts of wind, and you're familiar with hers, but this is her first time properly meeting you. And any alertness melts away from her, and she immediately begins to bound, walking on air very similarly to the way you do, but with higher fox-like jumps over the water to greet you.
When Leora first lands, immediately starting to take in the vibes, they shrink back at first, kind of reflecting that anxiety from the deer, almost becoming a little shy herself. But seeing you react, it's almost like a burst of sunlight comes off of her, and her form straightens back up a little taller and just starts cartwheeling towards you as well. The smell here, I don't really have senses in the traditional sense, but I love the way the little bits of plants interact with the wind, and I can't help but kind of become a little bit of a breeze as I bounce around with you, almost like a rabbit of sorts jumping around with you.
Do you still have the little clouds following you?
I usually do.
That's so cute. I think Agresta would, especially with the little bits of wind kicking up, as they float around and through her fur almost, which begins to stand up a little bit in the wake of the storm and the electricity that follows you, you get this sort of smell of earthiness and cut plants, a little bit of sawdust that begins to reach you, but it invokes an emotion, and it's this reciprocal excitement of, oh my gosh, it's you, hello. I think Agresta would use the move keep. She plans to gift to the world something that has unrealized potential so far, but that down the road, hopefully they'll find a way to use it or discover its true potential. And in doing so, she kind of pauses for a moment as the two of us kind of skip across the water. And she very suddenly brings herself to a halt, and then kind of looks up at you and very gently, like, reaches around with her snout and kind of lifts her frog friend out of her honeysuckles on her back. And she floats up towards one of your little cloud friends and very gently just sets it down. And you see a frog devoid of color, or filled with a new color that seems to be the shadow of what used to be blue, this emptiness. It's very unusual and it's very unique, and she sets the frog down and lets it kind of float there on the cloud, kind of pausing for a moment to make sure it's steady, and then almost instantaneously just taking a dive under the water. She leaps up in the air the same way that foxes in snow go hunting, by like pouncing on unseen prey, and she dives beneath the surface And swimming down right in the center of where this basin of water is in the middle of the river, not being affected or swept away by the current, she sniffs around in the mud a little bit, seeking something that she saw earlier. And after a couple moments, you can see some bubbles float up to the surface underneath your feet. The light smell of florals and seaweed and pond scum being carried with it. And after a moment, she pokes her head back out of the water and looks up at you. And in her mouth is what looks like a stone. Almost bidding you to follow her, she swims towards the bank. And with the stone in her mouth, she sets it down in the grass and begins to dig a teeny little hole right next to it. And as you approach her and get a better glimpse, it's not so much a stone, it's more a fossil. You can see an imprint of what looks to be a single stem, some delicate-looking fuzzy leaves, and a single node right at the end of the stem, kind of separated out from it slightly. And she takes this fossil and very gently, very delicately moves it with her paw into the hole that she created. And again, with her paws, delicately scooping the soil back over it and giving it a couple little pats. And she rests back on her haunches, looking satisfied at a job well done, and then turns and looks at you, almost expectantly, as behind her, a shoot begins to grow out of the freshly dug soil. There's little bits of grass that begin to grow up to meet it and stretch over, and almost as if welcoming it to the world, the same sort of plant begins to grow. Very dandelion-like. It goes through its life cycle of budding out into a bright crimson little flower that then folds outward, almost as if it were revealing some sort of latent magic or abilities, and exposing it to the world, gifting it to the world, and then as it folds outward, crystalline-looking shoots move out from the center, almost matching the way that you refract light. And she just looks at it and then looks at you. It ain't great. It was a 6. That was for the keep move. I got a +0 for keep.
As I watch this scene unfold, I'm absolutely smitten. Almost am a little heartbroken that it didn't go exactly the way they wanted. But I love this flower, and I lean over it and first beaming like sunshine, start to cry some happy tears. Almost willing it, come on, you can do this. And there's a little breeze around me that ruffles all the plant life, and trying to nourish it into being with the rain and sun. So I rolled an 8. I think I want to choose, it will one day be loved, but they will not remember your name. And with it, partially carried in this rain, is all of the weight of the stories that I picked up passing through the city. And being smitten in this moment by something so beautiful, I can't help but instill in it a wish that the future of this world is a kinder one and a safer one than what came before.
As you finish imbuing this stem with your wishes and your hopes for the future, she very much gives like a little nod, like almost in the same way that, almost in a head bowing sort of way, where she touches the grass at your feet with her nose and then lifts her head up again. And even though her eyes don't have the same form that you're used to seeing or that you're used to feeling the effects of through your winds and your memories and your storms, you can definitely tell that she feels a sense of pride in not only what she had a hand in making with you, but also just in that she got to meet you for once. And with a bit of a hop and a skip, she lifts to her feet and does one little lap around the flower, almost as if it was a promise to protect it as best as she could while she's still here. And then, without a word, she leaps up, dancing across the invisible steps of air that she creates beneath her paws, goes over to her frog friend, lifts it back onto her back, and gives you one last little head shake and one little shake of the paw before moving her way back behind the waterfall and into the cave that she emerged from.
We close the book. Just for now, there is still such a long ways left to go. There is still so much heart work to attend to if we hope to one day resemble a place one could call a home. Thank you for tuning in to The Heart is a Dungeon for this episode of The Ballad of Heartwork. Let's meet our incredible guests. Agresta, do you have a name? Does it have antlers or smell like dirt? And do people ever use it?
Oh man, occasionally, usually when they're mad at me. Hi, I'm Diana Faye, also known as Diana of the Rose. I'm a tabletop gaming content creator, so I do a lot of fancy APs like this one, a lot of podcasts, interviews, and I'm also a streamer and a member of the Twitch Latin Guild, Pride Guild, and I got the news as of recording this that I also joined the Women's Guild, so I collected all three Infinity Stones. And beyond that, I'm also a model, social media content creation consultant, and YouTuber. Oh my god, I do everything, but mostly I'm just happy to be here.
Leora, you have the most beautiful clouds. Do you have a name, and may we know it?
I'm not sure if I do. I'm Feral Moonbeam, starstruck. It was super amazing to play with you. You do so much cool stuff. But I mostly live at The Heart is a Dungeon. I also do all of the art for the podcast.
And I'm Rara. But that's enough about that.